gone one up top. We're gone one up top. All the other formations, they surely have to stop. We're gone one up top. We're gone one up top. Jamie and Jordan, the bullshit never stops.
You're listening to the One Up Top podcast, hosted by Jamie and Jordan. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and all of our social media outlets at One Up Top Podcast.
And a very big welcome to this week's episode of One Up Top. My name is Jamie Whelan. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Jordan O'Reilly. How are you getting on, Matt?
Well, good. Welcome back, lads. Take number four to try to record this, but we're getting on here now anyway. Hopefully this will be the last one. Week four we are. We've gotten this far, so no lawsuits, no nothing so far.
No solicitors on the phone again, thank God. Yeah. Dan Lambert, stop ringing me.
Bang, bang, be getting his windows put in.
Again.
Anyway, yeah, we're back here again. Just now, listeners last week, we got a few people texting, someone from Ukraine. There's a family in Ethiopia listening to. We had a couple of hundred listeners in Venezuela, which is a bit fucking mad.
All the lads in Caracas.
And a few from Chile as well. But all good so far. We're still keeping up. And thanks everyone for listening. And we're going to keep enjoying the show as much as you will.
Absolutely, yeah. We want to just thank our guest from last week, Luis de Lima, also known as Venezuelan Bows. I suppose you don't really know what to expect when someone walks in with long hair, tattoos and a missing finger, but there you go.
A missing t-shirt.
Yeah, and Wayne as well was brilliant. And we've two lads in here with us today. Rory Kirk, how are you getting on?
How are you doing, lads?
You're the image of fucking Chris Wood, by the way.
I'm told that every week at this stage.
Fuck me. I've got Carl Lamb here as well. Both lads are coaches in the Bowls St. Kevin's boys setup. So it's nice to have two lads who actually know their football in this week compared to everyone else. So,
we just like to thank our partners again this week, Vod's Fashion, and we've got Bodge and the lads. Jamie, what are we at today?
We are once again sponsored by Grand Cru Beers. A traditional bottle opening here. We're all in the gargle here tonight. I'm on the Grevensteiner, the Hell's Pills. Jordan O'Reilly, you're on the L West Planner stuff, is it?
Yeah, the 2.5% light.
Well, so thanks very much, Bodge, for sorting us out once again. So, unfortunately, we'll start with the league table as it stands. Bohemians are sitting in sixth place. A nice win on the weekend, but the table, we're actually only, what is it, 4 points off fourth at the moment, 3 points off fourth? It's not as bad as it looks, is it, lads?
No, it seems like one of those seasons like where 3 points will move you up plenty of places. Like, I think if a team goes on a run, it seems like that you'll move up fairly swiftly. So, looking good after the weekend.
Does that say something about the state of the league this year, does it? Do you think?
I think it's been indifferent. Like, I think there's been some strange results. You look at even Rovers aren't running away with it, like they're scoring a lot of late goals as well, which is helping them out. And then, like, apart from that, like, it's really quite a mismatch, people basically beating everyone around them, I suppose.
Like, it certainly looks like that. I mean, people are saying that it's not as good a league as it usually is. I think maybe looking from the perspective, if Dundalk and ourselves were up there, people might say otherwise, you know, maybe because they see teams like Sligo, Finn Harps, Drogheda in the top five, you know, you might get a bit of a different point of view on the way the table looks at the moment.
But we are a quarter of the way through the season and the league table doesn't lie. You know, you can talk about results and performance and you don't get what you deserve, but, you know, when you count up the points at the end, you do get what you deserve as such. A couple of good results then the weekend. Waterford couldn't pull out a team.
Yeah, Oscar Brennan, Swollen Head United. They had to play their under-19s. We're beaten 7-0 by Drogheda. Rovers, once again, as you said, a late winner.
Robbie mentioned, that's it. We move on.
And then the other result was Sligo Rovers beat Dundalk 1-0. And in the aftermath of that, lads, you've probably seen on Twitter, and they're organising a fans protest about things. Do you see that online as well, Carl?
Yeah, I saw a few of the players caught up north as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're winning games, no one really cares about those things.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
you get
away with more there, but kind of goes hand in hand. When you lose a few games, people are always going to pick holes.
Yeah.
And one of them is obviously being caught away. So
amateur hour though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's poor. It's poor fun.
You said if they're winning games, no problem. But
we're obviously not avoiding lockdown ourselves much. But I mean, fucking off up to the north when you're the biggest earners in the league and you're down there. If Bowles had done that last week after our two results against Drogheda and Derry,
we'd be
lifting them out.
Never mind
fucking Dundalk, who are reeling in the cash themselves and they're showing up that sort of behaviour.
And the fans are looking to do a protest as well. You know, they're very upset about how the club is being ran, but you know what? It's the same owners that were winning leagues a couple of years ago. Shit hits the fan for a season or two and they're kind of not happy about things. If the owners left and they were a shit club, if they left,
who didn't see this coming?
It's been the pipework for a few years now, I think, hasn't it? This sort of big collapse in Dundalk.
Yeah, well, after you, I think after you lost Stephen Kenny, you're, I suppose you're always worried that there will be some kind of reaction. It's been a bit messy since then. A lot of turnover of players, a lot of new players to the league as well. So trying to bed them in these COVID times,
yeah,
it's going to be hard. Definitely going to be hard.
I mean, some of the new players they brought in there as well. I mean,
they've just signed. It's like the United Nations.
I think it's very like. You can either unearth a gem like from Europe, like some like somebody can come over and do really, really well, and then it can go the other way as well, I suppose. Like, and that's the game you're playing. If you're taking unknown players from somewhat unknown leagues, I'm sure they do plenty of scouting, but I think like it is a bit of a risk bringing lads over. Like, and I think sometimes it backfires. Like on a couple of occasions, it has for them. But
did you notice that left back? Darragh Leahy has only started one game this year for Dundalk, and someone that we rated so highly here, someone that we, you know, would you even want Darragh Leahy back the way our two left backs?
I think
backs
he's like, rated around the league, isn't he? Like,
yeah, he's rated around the league.
Player. Like, I think he wouldn't have a problem. Like,
they played someone else left back on Friday. I can't remember his name for life me now.
You know, you can say the grass isn't always greener, but the other day Darragh Leahy played in the Emirates Stadium in the Europa League.
Yeah,
like there's not enough money in the world that make you stay at Bowes if you got that opportunity.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. And as you said about players coming over, there's a couple of new lads that are in there, but they've also let a couple of guys go. I mean, I thought your man Nathan Adua was very good last season. He's just gone. You know, this players like, coming and going. That's not good for a team at all. Like, you know,
you have a couple of lads there as well, like who. Sort of like the glue in it, if you know what I mean. Like, I suppose Gartland's not there, as long as he's injured, but then you have Melton, Massey, like those are lads who are probably strong around the dressing room.
They're,
like, good,
they're both gone,
yeah. That's what I mean. Like,
oh, sorry,
I'm not editing that in either. You're fucking idiot,
yeah. No, I'm saying like that, I'm saying they're I'm saying they're big losses for the dressing room. Like, and I suppose like this year can be difficult when you lose players, like especially big players in the dressing room, like who keep it sorted together, you know what I mean?
Look, we'll move on anyway, and we'll go on to the or fixture. I only seen the first half myself. I had an exam there at 7 o'clock in the
How'd you do? Did you pass? Did you?
I don't know, I won't have it for months. I won't be telling you if I don't anyway. But so I had the exam at 7, and but the match obviously started at 6. So I said, fuck it, I watched the first half anyway. Thank God we were training up, because I don't think my anxiety would have been able to handle the exam going nil all at half time. But
thankfully, the three of us were able to go. I was the one on our media pass this week after my actual pass for the matches was taken away from me for being drunk and disorderly, apparently. Apparently, getting thousands of people safely around the island on buses for the last 6 years isn't good enough these days. But
getting a thousand people to listen to your scutter is.
But thank God we got a win. Obviously, there was three losses and a draw, which nearly felt like four losses going into the game. But another win, and under the watchful eyes of Siobhan Madigan, who we always seem to win when she's on commentary.
We deserve to. We have to suffer another 90 minutes of her, don't we?
It was Stephen Doyle's in the commentary box beside her. I can't imagine. He's probably got his head in his hands when she starts talking. But no, Siobhan, keep doing what you're doing, because we always win when you're on commentary. So
which is making a match, lads.
Yeah, they played very well. A great start. Kind of bluffing Harps out of the water. You kind of knew from the first 10-15 minutes the boys were on it.
Yeah, a lot of
great intensity.
A lot of attention. They want to get the ball excellent back and pass it around.
You could see it, like, as Carl says there, first 10-15 minutes, it was really like you could see the change in intensity from them. Like, I think first few minutes, really, they look really strong, really energetic. And I think it almost, as Carl said, blew them out of the water. And getting that early goal as well helped, like, settles things down. Like,
I thought going into the game, I was obviously a bit wary. Obviously, Finn Harps, they've beaten us already. They got a couple of decent results. I genuinely thought at the start of the season that Finn Harps, they're actually in the league this year to compete, not survive, because they're taking the form in from last season, and they've got some good results. They beat us in Dundalk in the first 2 weeks of the season. The way they set up on Saturday, they played a five at the back, which didn't really rotate into a three or a five because they hardly attacked. You know, they looked all over the shop. They went out to kick and hit us all game.
I thought
they were fouling from the start. It was really bad tactics from a team that I thought might come down and play a bit of ball and not just try bully us, but try beat us.
I think they do look like a different team from years gone by, like where like you'd expect to pick up points against them regularly. I think they look like a team where that they can actually compete in the top half of the league. Like, and I think credit to Bowes, like the weekend didn't really let them settle at all. And as you say, pinned them back to a state where they were almost playing a flat five, like at times, like where they couldn't really get out. And as I said, credit to Bowes' intensity for pinning them in and keeping them there. You know what I mean?
They had plenty of chances going forward, but no players got forward with them. It was just the two lads. It was Foley and The other fellow, Afolobi, I think his name is.
It's very difficult when you're defending
that. Huge team. Massive. Look at the back.
That's why I think Feely played right back in that Andy Lyons because they had to match
that. Wasn't Feely just fantastic as well? I thought Feely was brilliant. There was a chance in the second half in Harpscar. I mean, we're 4-0 up, I think, at this stage. Feely just absolutely tracks all the way back and does this.
Defended the back post really well.
Yeah, I thought he was really good after that. I think
we're very critical of him again that Sligo game.
Yeah.
But look, he's going to be challenging Andy Lyons, but it looks like Keith Long's renowned for not changing the winning team. So I'll be interested to see what position that goes forward.
I think that's our starting 11 for next few weeks.
Definitely, yeah. Well, as long as they're winning, this is the starting 11.
Yeah. I think you said it last week, Ali Coote, he can play further up the pitch. He can play on the wing. That's who he used to play.
That Derry
played
game.
On the wing and he was fantastic.
That Derry game, when I was watching him, he had space. He was obviously sitting beside Bucco. There was times where Coote had 20 yards in front of him and he never made that run. He seemed to be a bit more conservative. But he seemed to have, you know, the shackles were off. He could go forward and we reaped the benefits of that, I think. What do you guys make of that, Vince?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he was brilliant. He linked very well with Dawson as well. Yeah, in fact, Dawson was so close to him. The two of them were excellent. It was just a good win from start to finish. I thought
he took his two goals really well. I thought he was brilliant. I thought when I was looking at his moving around the pitch, it almost looks when we have the ball that Tierney is not only like a centre attacking mid, but also coming into centre mid sometimes. But he's like a second striker now, and he's playing off the striker as well. It's like Long is trying to mould him into something else, because we always seen Tierney in 2019, he was this kind of midfield player, you know, a terrier in midfield.
He could play that deeper role alongside the football.
He could play if he wanted. Yeah, absolutely.
So energetic. Like, he just covers so much ground around the pitch.
Like a Jack Russell around
the pitch. Absolutely, that's what I mean. I think no one would want to play against him. I think no defenders, if he's going to play higher up, no defenders want to, they can't settle on the ball. If he plays a bit deeper, then, you know, he's picking up loads of second ball. I think he's just really energetic and he's really coming into his own this year as well.
Do you think that he didn't play much last season? Do you think Long was probably hiding him?
Well, I think
he knew he's got a secret weapon here. Don't let anyone see him last year. Well, obviously, it was
winning last year.
Yeah, but there wasn't many games last year. But do you not think he might have just sheltered him and said, right, I have a secret weapon here for next season. This is, and I'm going to unleash him now. He didn't play him at all last year. I think we only seen him a couple of times come off the bench.
No better two lads talk about easing young players into senior squads, and two lads beside us. So, I think they have to speak on this more than we ever will.
I think every player is different, I suppose. Yeah. Like, I think obviously Keith has his reasons for, like, maybe I don't know if he picked up a knock or whatever it was last season where he didn't play as many minutes, but he's really coming into his own. So you have to say it's a really good job managing him. Like, and maybe that bit of freshness this year is doing him the world of good. Like,
absolutely, yeah. Just on the Harp setup as well. Obviously, we were able to hear Ollie Hogan and is Noel Hegarty, isn't it?
Paul Hegarty. Yeah.
Absolute roaring. Yeah. I mean, he treats his team like a pack of Rottweilers. I mean, I could have swore I heard him saying Sikkim, Neil, and I mean, there's a lot of foreign players in that team as well. Yeah. They've no idea what he's saying. No. I mean, it's somewhere between, you know, gibberish and pigeon English.
I think sometimes, though,
that gets
buoyant from the lads, doesn't it? Sometimes
a large hairy man shouting at you from the side.
Sounds like you.
Thank you, ref. Every decision.
But I said, you know, they set up the foulers quite a lot. You know, I think they must have had three or four yellow cards in the game. Well, they should have had more. But there was a certain player, and it was their captain, and it was right in front of me down on block A. He put in a bad tackle on Ali Coote. And the next thing he's seen, he tried to throw a dig at Ali Coote, Dave Webster. And I just thought, geez, these aren't here today. These aren't here today for a result. They're not here to get a win. They were here today to kick a bit of lumps out of us. And I thought, it was very unlike Harps all season, and it was a bit disappointing to see them, and I hope they don't keep playing like that. I'd rather see Harps that are competing, not a Harps that wants to just survive, and I certainly hope that.
How much of that, though, was down to the agitation of us having bought the void Q and Tierney on the pitch and them not getting a kick of it?
Yeah, there was a lot of intensity about the Bowers play. I think
conviction in our attacks.
Yeah, and Bort looks better every week as well. Now, I think if you watch what he does, because he's so small, it's like he gets under players' shoulders.
Yeah,
he comes up against the bigger player, he's just right under them. Now, I don't know how he'd be against more or less like technical, smaller fullbacks. But
no, he uses his body. Yeah. He gets into good little pockets as well.
Yeah.
Really, he uses his body. He's a good player. I really have to say now, I like watching him.
Yeah, he's coming into himself a lot more in the last few weeks. And I think he's only going to get better and better.
Are you finding Bort, Rory?
Yeah, I think he complements the other players around him. Like, Dawson links really well. Can play on the inside, as Carl said, pick up really nice pockets. but also can play wide as well and can take his man on. Just looked really, really bright. Every time he gets it, you think something's going to happen. And as I say, like when Bowes fans are back in the ground, it's someone who's going to excite them.
Try
them.
Absolutely.
Footwork is excellent. His technical ability is brilliant.
I think he's better since he's changed his boots. That's just that. That's me being on the spectrum kicking in there.
We'll leave Finn Harps behind us now, and as we start all of our podcasts into the watches, all want to hear. So, Carl, we'll go with you first. Did you manage to get into Bowes?
Well, it's a long, long, long story. So
don't worry, we've got all fun tonight.
I spoke to Stephen Bourke, obviously, who knows Bowes inside out, a bit of a historian. My granny's cousin, I think it was, back in the 1920s or 30s, used to bring his donkey to Bowes matches.
Fuck off.
His donkey with Bowes rosettes.
Fuck off.
I swear to God, this is a true story.
Bowes, I didn't expect this.
A man by the name of Billy Moran was his name.
Jeff Farrell will probably tell you who he is.
Yeah, he probably knows him. Yeah. Bowes rosettes and Bowes this, that and the other. And if Bowes lost, you didn't speak to him for weeks. So he's a bit like us. He was obsessed with Bowes. Now, like I said, I don't know. Stephen Bourke knows the exact date, but it was the 1920s, 30s, 40s. In around that time, Bowes were only a fairly new club. So he was on my ma's side. My dad been following Bowes since the early 60s anyway. He's Bowes mad. So I had no choice. My older brother had no choice. He was brought to Bowes match when he was a few weeks old.
Yeah.
There's a photo at home somewhere of my brother being lifted into the league trophy by Tourich O'Connor. So that was in 1978. I came along a few years later, brought the Bowes games for a few weeks old. So Bowes mad. It's actually funny. I was looking at it today. Today's 29 years since the FA Cup final.
The 93, wasn't it?
So that's my first proper memory of Bowes. Now, I was going to games since I was a baby.
I am.
But that cup final was my first, proper Bowes memory. I remember that day from start to finish, Tillo with the goal. And from that day on, I just became obsessed with Bowes.
Yeah,
so, you know, you could have your...
Inherited it, more or less.
Yeah, I had no choice. I had absolutely no choice. Like, there was never going to... I'm from Dars Edge Street, so there's never going to be... Do you pick Shells or do you pick Bowes? It was always going to be Bowes.
Mm. Do you follow any English sides as well?
Not really, no. My dad's a West Ham fan.
Yeah.
As a child, because everyone supported the English team, I would have looked out for Liverpool results, but I kind of fell out of that.
Most people who are obsessed with Bowes, particularly when you get to 16, 17, you sort of see through the shite of what it is.
You really make a decision around that and say, fuck on, Bowes loyal, never mind it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with following a Premier League player. Wouldn't knock anyone for that, but I think you kind of do make a decision.
Yeah, I just became obsessed with Bowes, and 93, the following year, I remember it was about 25, was in my uncle's van going through Whitehall and seeing the Bowes bus broken down at the side of the road. And my dad looking, going, that looks like the Bowes bus broken down, and I couldn't be, and getting up to the dock before the Bowes team were there. And every year in the 90s, it seemed like we lost the cup semi final.
Feels like the last 4 years.
Yeah, it was like Pats are there. Every year we lost the cup semi final. I finished second. Heartbreak. Like, you just think as a Bowes fan, it's always going to be heartbreaking. And obviously 2001 came along. I would have went to Aberdeen. I would have been in Rosenborg, Hampstead, all those European trips.
So, stories about you and Trondheim, but I won't be telling them.
A few ladies.
That wasn't
from Chippy, was it?
No, we won't name names.
Right, okay.
He's got a reputation up hold, so we'll let him hang on there.
Right. We believe that you grew up with a cricket bat in your hand. But I also believe your outfielder was a Bowes fan, wasn't he?
Yeah, the West Britain me that. No, my mum's from Manchester, so that got the cricket side goes back to there. But my dad's is staunch Bowes from when he was only a nipper. I was only talking to him today, saying I think it was 77 maybe the first time he went when he was 14. So and then I think they won the league in 78, so he's claiming that one there as his when he arrived at Bowes. So he actually used to go up with a fella, John O'Reilly, who actually sadly passed away there on the way home from a Bowes game up in Derry. Yeah. Killed in an accident on the way home from Derry. So I think that sort of...
With Daniel.
I think a lot of Bowes fans have known him. He was Bowes home and away. Followed Ireland around as well, so Yeah, I think that my dad, like, he went to every game with him, like, so there's a lot of history there, and I think he's sort of, obviously the four children got in the way of, like, going every week or whatever it is. So I think then he started getting back into it, I suppose, when Paddy came along and started playing for Bowes. And then that's, I would always look out for their results when I was younger. He'd bring me, I think my first memory of Bowes was a European game. I can't remember now for the life of me who it was. I'd say it was early 2000s. But I was sitting in the Des Kelly, and that's the only thing I remember. I remember the colours. It was red, and there, I think we were playing against a team in blue and yellow.
Yeah, it's Bate Borisov.
Bate. It must have been, yeah, because that's the only. I must have been about six or seven. So, you remember the lights, you remember the colours, and that's about it. Like, you know what I mean?
Remember asking to go to get speech out of the shop.
Literally, that's it. 100%. That's the things you remember. And then as I got older, then really started getting into it. A few of the lads used to knock around with in Raheen, he used to go. Collie's Cuts.
Collie's Cuts. Open today.
Started going with them then in my teens, and then really started getting into it in recent years, I suppose. But yeah, no, there's a lot of history there and with the family, and that's what really gets you hooked on it, isn't it?
And when your brother Paddy was playing for Bowes, were you immensely proud of that, to say, geez, my brother's playing for Bowes, or were you? Do you play football as well?
But a question, if a young Rory Kirk walked in, how does that attitude be accepted?
Paddy always gives me stick about I had a poor attitude when I played. So, I'm a bit of a hypocrite now. If I was coaching myself, I'd be hammering myself. So any of the lads listening to this now, they've won up on me.
Poor attitude. You should come down and play six or so with us now on Thursday.
You won't be on penals. Because I was told about a Maynooth University game, you had two penals. What happened?
Semi-final of the All-Ireland, And so, now I don't know how I ended up, because we had players like Jamie McGrath in the team, Darren Markey, a couple of other lads knocking around the league, and I ended up so here I am now. I think we were playing Limerick in the semi-final of, I think it was the Freshers Trophy or whatever it was, down in Limerick, and so I step up then, missed it in normal time. Jamie McGrath scores two in the last 2 minutes to bring it to extra time, see extra time out, goes to penalties. So there's me thinking, you know, I'm the penalty taker. I'll step back up, same side, exact same save, knocked out in the semi-final. Very much tail between the legs.
Did you retire after that?
I did, and then that's when I took up coaching.
It was either that or a referee, so I think I made a good choice.
No, but I think when Paddy was playing, I think it was a source of immense pride for my family, especially my dad. Going since he was 14, I think he was almost living out his dream through Paddy, you know what I mean? And then I remember being in the stand, like, because I was proper into the Bowes at that stage then, like, for a good 5 years. And I remember there was one game, I think he was on the bench, it was Rovers at home. I think we were 1-0 up, about half an hour left. And there's, Grant, you're still nervous, Rovers games. And then my mate says to me, fucking hell, Paddy's coming on. And then the last half an hour, I've never felt as stressed like it. The longest half an hour of my life. But, like, even though you trust them, like, you know, it's just
it's a personal nervous.
100%. You're looking through your fingers, just hoping that it goes right.
I remember, obviously, I know you and Paddy, we go to gigs and whatever that. But I remember, I think it might be one of Paddy's first games. And it was Cabin Thiele in the League Cup. It could have been. He put the best tackle, one of the best tackles. And Paddy went off injured after. That's how much of a smasher it was. And I remember everyone crying, going, who's this kid? And
he likes to tackle.
I think that's where
he comes out the right side of a tackle all the time as well.
I think he's always played, reflects the way he plays, that he has that bit of history within the family, and he plays like known. He's always proud of playing.
And there's not many players like that in the League of Ireland, that someone that, you know, comes through the youth setup that wants to play for the club, and that's their dream. You know, there is no real loyalties in the League of Ireland sometimes. There's quite a lot of mercenaries, you could say that. And there's quite a lot of merry-go-round players who want to just come, you know, because they know they're getting a wage and game time. Your brother, Paddy, would be someone that, you know, he played for the, you know, youth setup. He wanted, he's a Bowes fan, and it was his dream to play for Bowes.
I think that's what you want, isn't it? Like, especially with the next generation, you want them growing up wanting to play for Bowes rather
than... That's your job, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. Essentially, as Bowes fans, we want to see Bowes fans playing for Bowes.
Absolutely.
You know, young lads that have quality, young lads that are going to come through, and they physically want to play for this team.
I think there's some players that come along that you can see, like, it's almost like a fan in the shirt, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
And you can tell it a mile away when it really matters to them. Like, you look at lads like Detzer as well. Like, you'll always see it was a source of pride from playing in the jersey. And I think that's what fans want at the end of the day, isn't it? Like,
absolutely, yeah.
You even have to look at Paddy's post when he left Bowes. There's not many players that left that get that reception. Like,
people that find the emotion in it as well. You know, like, it was a big thing for him to probably move out with the club, you know, and to go somewhere. But look, at least he's gone somewhere where he's getting game time. But
and he's still in red and black.
He's still in red and black. We'll hopefully, we beat him anyway. We'll move on now, right? We want to talk to lads about what they do between Bowes and Kevin's. Now, this is the link up that Bohemian FC have with St. Kevin's boys. Talk to us now about, like, how beneficial it is. Is it much different to, let's say, just the Bowes schoolboy setup and having Kevin's involved as well? Is it, you know, obviously Kevin's have great facilities, Bowes have a great senior facility, but probably not as good for the junior teams. What's the benefits, in your opinion, like, as you two lads, as coaches? Is it more beneficial to have the two clubs linked up together and going forward? And is it something that, you know, it's really good to build on? Like, every club has, I think Pat's are with Cherry Orchard, is it, as well? And Bell.
Joey's a Bray.
Dundalk with Malahide United. I mean, it's something that most clubs are linking up with. So where do you see it going now in the next couple of years? You know, is it something that's really good to build on?
Yeah, like, I think it's mutually beneficial for both parties involved. I think Kevin's obviously have a great history of producing top players all around the league and in England. Bowes have really been working in that area as well, as a youth section as well, and doing really good work recently over recent years and going back, I'm sure, before my time as well. So I think, as I said, it's mutually beneficial for both, and I think the club, you can see, is reaping the rewards of the link with players coming through.
Players coming back.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, like, the links as well, I think if you treat players right when they're younger, they'll always find their way back. And I think you've seen that with a few lads now. Even you look at the first team now, like the likes of Anto Breslin was away before.
Yeah.
And he's at Wolves. He was Kevin's growing up, like, right. And he's back playing really well. And you have, like, Dawson as well, like, was Kevin's all the way up and, like, really thriving now in the first team.
Dawson was at Watford.
He could have stayed there,
but he chose to come back and play for Bowes, which probably says maybe a lot about maybe how things were at Watford, or, you know, he wanted to come back into the League of Ireland, and now he's obviously making a name for himself. Just with regards to that, with young players going over, do you guys, as two coaches, do you think we should keep young players in Ireland as long as possible? Or
is there a certain age you think this is the time?
No, it's like, I was talking to someone today about a player that's gone away to England, and Rory would have coached him, I would have coached him, and his path is different. You know, he's had a different path. He wouldn't have been around international teams or DDSL teams, you know, that type of thing.
He would have been a radar.
Yeah, completely, yeah, yeah.
Danny Grant was a bit like that, wasn't he? He sort of was a bit of a radar.
Yeah, and, like, that's right for him.
Yeah.
So what I don't agree with is, like, the one size fits all.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I think people can commit to not being a fundamentalist or having, like, a philosophy and not changing, but, like, there isn't one size fits all. There's some lads that have to, like, are exceptional and need to be in what you'd call a professional environment.
Would you not say a professional environment wouldn't be, like, let's say Bohemian's first team now up in DCU, Dundalk, professional environment, Rovers, Pats, professional setups, professional environments, you know, players that are going to rip it up in the league and get their well-earned move. You know, look at Danny Grant, look at Warren O'Hara, you know, Kieran Sadler from Cork. There's plenty of players that have gone over after doing really, really good business. And
the lads would know more about youth football and a post stamp than me and you would, Jay, all together.
Yeah.
But I suppose we all have our own different opinions. Sending 12, 13-year-olds over to the UK. You know, I went to school with lads that have played. I think he might have actually played for Kevin's. I'm not going to name him, obviously, but he was over at Wolves and he was over at West Brom. And he was going over for trials. I think basically he was over for the whole season doing a trial without going back and forth. And didn't work out, and he's just completely snapped football when he came back. You know, I think that there is a high, don't use the word failure rate, but there's a high rate of players that come back from the UK and they throw the cap of football, and I think we're losing a lot of them by sending them over.
Players that disappear when they go over there, I think they're a big prospect.
Yeah.
You never hear about them again. I think lost in football. Like,
I think it like as Carl said, it really depends on the individual. I think it suits some lads to go over and to maybe get away from, like, whether it be
distractions,
like, distractions over here. And it suits some lads. They really thrive in that situation. Whereas other lads just might not feel ready. Like, you know, it might not suit them. And it might benefit them staying out here for a bit longer. Like as you say, Danny Grant, he went under the radar, somewhat underage, and then came into his own when he was had two seasons, maybe three seasons, under his belt of senior football. And
he got a well-deserved
Ireland 21s. Yeah. And I think, like, you really can't say that, like, because what suits one person might not suit another. Yeah. So I think, like, from that point of view, sending them over when they're younger can really suit someone to get away from things and maybe focus on their football, whereas other lads can thrive over here.
But other players, as you said, that will go over there and, you know, they go over 17, 18 and all of a sudden they're at a big club and they've just turned into a complete Charlie.
Yeah, or they could be overwhelmed.
I heard you're a bit of a Charlie as well, around the training ground.
I don't know who's giving me this information.
I had a couple of messages actually. They asked you, could you put out a grid here? Rory 10-yard grid and a Detta 10-yard grid are a bit different, I heard.
Yeah, I think...
That's a row I saw many times last year. What's 10 years? What, 10 yards? Or,
and the line was, you're supposed to be a school teacher, he says to me. You can't even mark out a 10-yard grid, but no.
Yeah. And we actually had a couple of messages. It's the last time I slag you, Rory. Don't worry, you know, I had a few pops at you now.
You're getting away with this, ladies.
And a couple of under 17 players messaged, will you ever watch the fucking babes? The smell of them. You said you should be ashamed yourself.
You see, that's what Detta had me doing, all that sort of thing. You wouldn't see him carrying any gear home. He'd be back in my car and send it home to the man. Yeah.
Your relationship with Detta, though, you actually won during the 17s league with Detta,
last year we won the under 17s league. I think it was a brilliant year for me personally, and as a group I think it was a really, really good year. Like, for me personally, just working with him was unbelievable. Obviously, you're in the stand watching him the year before, like, and then to get asked to go in with him and work that closely with him and build up a relationship I think it was really, really beneficial for me. I learned so much from that year, like, just small things that you don't think about. Mm-hmm. Like, he might say to you, like, say, after a session, like, I don't think that would work with, like, older players or a senior team. Like, if you went into a senior setup, I don't think that would work. Or he'd say, that was really good, like, I like that, maybe change this. Like, small things, just the amount of experience he has being in around the first team helped me so much last year. He was really, 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 and even for the lads, it was unbelievable
to have an absolute legend as your manager.
I think, like,
instead of just yourself,
I knew going in that was a particularly really strong group. We had, like, I think over 10 internationals or, like, underage internationals in the group, and I think you get that respect automatically when you have someone like Derek Pender walking into the dressing room.
The senior players, I know Scott Allardyce was petrified of Detta, so I can only imagine what the 17s
were. They probably looked at his sending off record and said, fuck me. Yeah.
I think, like, even I think he did, like, change the mentality of some of the younger lads. Like, I think really showed them what you need to get to that next level and really push into the senior setup. And I think from that team alone, I think there was 7 or 8 lads signed for the first team this year. Like, but 7 or 8 of the lads signed first team deals, and I think that wouldn't have come, like, I think without Derek's guidance. I think he's, from that point of view, brilliant for preparing young lads to go into a senior dressing room.
Brilliant. And Carl, you were involved in the 14s and
So
obviously that's a lot younger age group.
Absolutely,
you've got lads
that's a different challenge altogether.
You're probably trying to pick out, like. Is it hard to tell who are the best players in this age group?
Absolutely,
who's going to go
forward? You'd have a lot of late developers. We'd have a few lads, say, born the last 4 months of the year. So, in theory, they could be nearly a year younger than their teammates who were born.
So, that puberty stage.
There's loads of kind of things. Lucky enough, this is my third kind of cycle with this age group.
Right, so you've been around before.
Yeah,
so
I kind of know what to look out for.
And is that gap an issue at the moment, that we're missing, that in between age at the...
Yeah, the League of Ireland, because the League of Ireland is... it's 14s, 15s, 17s, 19s this year. It was 13s, 15s.
Yeah.
Those gap years are a worry, yeah, absolutely.
So how does the gap year work? I mean, they used to
skip a year.
Or they go up and play 2 years of 15s.
That just sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, it's madness,
ridiculous.
And your worry is if they go to sign for a 15s team, they mightn't play. So I think that is something that they're looking at changing, because it needs to be changed.
Well, I think it was a good step, as much as, you know, the likes of Kevin's Home Farm, Cherry Orchard. I think if you're going to have a good thriving National League, you need to have a good thriving National League Academy, where you want kids to sign. You know, when I was growing up, kids wanted to sign for Home Farm, Cherry Orchard. We have to change that mindset, and we can only do that by changing facilities and changing the quality of them leagues, where we want the team to sign for a Bowls or a Pats or a Rovers, and yeah, not
absolutely
the, a Home the, Farm. Unfortunately, that's been the history, and those, yeah, that is taken away from the clubs, all the work they've done. But I think the progress as a league and as a country football-wise, I think this has to go forward in that direction.
I want to ask you one thing. You managed a player all through your career, Evan Ferguson,
yeah,
who seems to be superhuman. That he's able, I think he's playing on 23s now.
Yeah,
I mean, he's just
a teenage Haaland.
Yeah.
I mean, he's someone that you coached from. Was it 14s up or earlier?
Five, when he was five. Six.
And did you know then, or is that?
So you have a feeling when he was that young that he's going to be top.
Yeah, like that was 10 years ago. So it's actually June 2011. Started,
yeah,
and in Kevin's walking out to the pitch doing the first session, and there's actually Sean as well that's in with the Bowls Force team now. The two of them are just smacking the ball back and forward, and you're looking going, geez, these are good, like even at that age, I think.
Sean Graham, isn't it?
Yeah. So you look at the two boys, Evan's, but like the thing is, Evan's a good lad as well, he's a nice young fella, like he is only a kid as well. And I think people have to remember that, how young he is. But
he's a fully grown man.
Yeah. Well, I was looking up to Evan at under-11s.
Yeah. did he make his first team appearance for Bowls? It was Derry away.
It was Chelsea in the friendly.
Chelsea friendly. He made a competitive appearance against Derry away.
Yeah.
He came on ahead of Ryan Swan, I believe. And there was this storm.
Yeah, it was mad. Was
he 14 or 15?
You think
he was
14. The thing that annoyed me about that was that, right, there was a social media storm, and that's grand, and there's the do-gooders and all them. Like, not a lot of people actually said how good of an achievement it was. Very few people actually said, this is a great achievement.
And on top of that, Evan Ferguson's father played League of Ireland,
absolutely,
and he would have had a massive say whether he was allowed in
that
dressing room. So people wanted to criticise the club and criticise Long, at the end of the day, if his father agreed and Long agreed, what's the fucking...
So with Evan now, he's at Brighton,
and
he's obviously playing under 23s, and that's a big step up as well. Again, do you see him in the first team anytime soon, or do you think he's going to have to a few more years there letting them mature, or is Graham Potter, the manager at Brighton, I don't know how he operates, but is he someone
who's going to give him a chance very soon? I think Brighton, without turning into an anorak that he's going to abuse me, I think Brighton gave the most minutes to academy players.
Did they this year? Right.
So he's at the right club, and there's a good few Irish lads at Brighton actually, and they all seem to be doing very well.
There's a good
Brighton academy director who's worked for the FAI for years, John Moran. So he's at the right club. You just don't want to put added pressure on any of the young players.
He's probably not doing himself a favour scoring every week either.
Absolutely, But especially two against Liverpool.
Yeah.
Such high.
And just to kind of come full circle now with the start of the conversation, he went over age 15, was he 16 when he went over?
16.
Do you think that was the right time for him to go?
Absolutely.
You think that was, for a player like him, it was the right time?
Absolutely, 100%.
As I said, you coached them all the way, so that's 100%.
Yeah.
But then there is other players at that age that would just get lost.
You see players like Evan, even last year for the 17s, and like playing for the first team, and he just looks ready, ready to make that next step to go and play at, like, we're talking a top level academy in England, the facilities wise, players wise, just the whole structure of it. I think he's one that you just felt was ready, and other lads you just don't think might not be ready, but you could see with him he was ready.
And I suppose before you finish up on the general round, before we sort of look more at a couple of players you're looking at, the state, the underage, you sort of touched on there, where do you want to be in 10 times the League of Ireland underage system, where do you want it to be, and realistically where do you think it's going to be in 2030, I'll say?
Well, like,
do you want to go away?
I think what we have to strive for is constant improvement, isn't it? You look at like our own setup now with DCU, and it's brilliant. It's a top elite setup. The Dubs were there,
And, is that right? What age does that start at the ECU?
So the 17s now have moved in there.
Oh, that's great. I thought it was only the first.
Yeah, so the 17s, 19s, and first team are training side by side now in the gym together. You have analysis rooms, and like rubbing shoulders with the first team is brilliant for our lads. Like
it's great for morale and
for the under 17s lads. Like, just even like small things, like even if it's like, for example, the first team lose a game, it's just knowing how to act, how to interact with players who have just come off the back of a defeat. Like you might have to be a bit more quiet around the area. Small things like that is just really good for young players.
Is that someone like yourself, you've kind of tell these players this? Or is it something the players probably cop themselves, haven't been around for so long?
Some of them definitely cop it. Like some of them definitely cop it. And then other lads like might not be as mature like or have the awareness that you might have to have a quick word, like just say, let's just be aware of our surroundings. You know what I mean? Because it's not like a schoolboy setup now where you're where you know you can just come in, train. You have to know how to act around the place and how to carry yourself.
Beg for a five-a-side at the end for the last 2 minutes.
So we'll play five-a-side to come down and play with us on the tours tonight.
We're super players this week.
Absolutely, yeah.
Where do you see it being in 10 years, Rory?
Yeah, I think, as I said, we've got to constantly improve, but you want as professional setup as possible. Like, I think the players, the talent is there. I just think we need the facilities. We need
the retention of people.
Yeah, we need the coach. Like, I think it's all about the people involved at the end of the day, like the coaches you have in the club or in all clubs around the country. I think that's where you see the difference. Like, and I think having good people in around these clubs is the big difference. Like, you can have all the facilities you want, but I think at the end of the day, it's the people who make a club. And
the young people who stop playing football on the back of a bad manager and the back of a bad coach and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think, as speaking to you guys too, it's great to see two lads who are very interested, open, and genuine about Bo's and Kevin's as well, which is brilliant. Yeah. I'm really great to speak to the lads about that.
Where do you see it then in 10 years, Carl?
Obviously, back of everything Rory said, they need to get rid of the gap years.
Yeah,
over the next few years.
That sounds like it's more.
Yeah, that's a nightmare.
Really amateur at this stage.
You know, that has to stop.
Is that down to the FAI?
It's just the structure. They brought the 19s in a while back, then the 17s, then the 15s, then
the 12s. Is there need for a B team? Senior level.
Yeah, definitely there needs to be something between the 100% needs to be something between 19s and the first team.
Yeah, because you're losing players that could flourish later in age. Yeah.
Even like Roy's saying about being around older players, like if you have an experienced team player come back from an injury or something and you put them
what they do in England. I mean, I was watching
the 23s
a couple of weeks ago. I think you're a Leeds fan as well.
Leeds have done it all year.
Cock, Rodrigo, Berardi, they were all playing on the 23s.
They have at least three every week. I know some people might think like it's a bit ridiculous, but it's absolutely brilliant
to rehabilitate players back from injury.
But the young players seeing how they act around the place, you know, how they recover, how they carry themselves, it's just absolutely priceless. And I think having that situation, like where you have 17, 19 year olds, like maybe an old pro coming down to play with them for one game, that might just change the mindset of somebody.
There's one thing I wasn't against. I understood them doing it. Rovers had the B team in the second division, and I know that the second division was great, and a lot of Bowles fans and Dolphins, why the fuck are they allowed to have it? I 100% agree. Like, because that gap is missing. Absolutely. I can understand why Michelle McCall is there. Why the ones that put it into it?
Absolutely, yeah. If I think that's why they need to probably bring in another division.
Yeah, maybe.
Now again, that boils down to money and finance and all. But if you could have a tour division as such,
for 23 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. So we'll move on to Longford game on Saturday. We're playing in Flankhair Park. 6 o'clock kickoff on Saturday Saturday evening. Absolute carpet of a pitch, as we know. It's an absolutely beautiful pitch. Perfect maybe if you want to play a bit of football against
them. Yeah, get at the fullbacks.
Particularly down the left. I think his name is Longford Streetwear or something like that. He'd walk around wearing a pair of super dry, a pair of diesel jeans and a pair of boot cuts down there.
Check sure.
We know who you are.
We'll take off the mask at Dub Street.
But I would expect one thing going into the game, I'd expect an unchanged 11.
Yeah, I can see that being unchanged. Lyons might come in, and I think that's going to be it. I think Breslin holds the spot.
Breslin holds the spot, yeah. Feely, as you said, he was that good. as you said, Andy Lyons is a brilliant player as well. I mean, you could have either of them in the team. Feely might give you that physicality. You might look at the Longford set and say, right, who's going to be physical out that side? Longford, they've got a couple of big forwards, big defenders, but in the middle, they're very, very small. It's actually a very small midfield battle. Zambra and Dervin, Buckley and... going to be Buckley and Devoy in the midfield. It's a very small midfield battle. There's no one that's going to tower over each other in there. No. So,
Dervin's a brilliant player.
He is good.
Yeah, they rate him, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really like him.
The general spine of the Longford team, Dervin, Dean Byrne, Shane Grimes, yeah. Shane Elwood, they've kept the kind of squad of players together that have been really, really good. And, you know, they won't go, you know, but hopefully, well, actually, I don't care if they go down or not, but, you know, if they do, they wouldn't go down without a fight.
No.
They certainly compete. Just concede a lot of late goals, haven't they, though? That's killed them. I've watched a good bit of them, and like what you will get,
you know, you sort of know what you're going to get from them. They're going to give 100%. They're going to be ratty. They're going to be in and around you. I think it's a strong, like, they're physical and really aggressive. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you know
what you're going to get, and I think, like, they'll go right till the last minute. Like, you saw that in Daly Mount as well with the comeback they had. But as I say, yeah, it's been tough for them coming up. They've kept, as you say, a similar squad to last year. And it's quite very young as well.
They took a couple of, as you said, experienced Premier Division players like Paddy Kerr.
Yeah. I think, and still, I think the demographic of the team is still quite young. So that they're a hungry bunch. So I think it would be a good game, I think.
And Carl, you touched on it there. You must watch them more than I do. How far do you think he can go in this league?
I think it's brilliant.
Football?
I don't know if you remember the cup game a few years ago, went to penalties. I thought he was brilliant that night. He's a good, really good footballer. Not Paddy, but I was talking to someone else who was involved with Longford, and they said, unbelievable trainer.
Yeah, he looks like he's got a really good
before every session.
He's obviously very loyal to him as well. He probably sat off for some other clubs.
And Kieran Between the Stripes as well, actually. We've got to plug his league of the podcast, but we'll plug it this week.
Absolutely, yeah. Just put a plane is this week. So if you want to hear something about, I think it's called the First Division.
And it touched on the Premier Division too.
A couple of teams down there, look, I don't know, what is it like there?
Mayview United,
Mayview,
Shells down there as well.
Kilkenny played there as well, as I think. So give him a shout if you want to hear about it. I was going to talk about a player for Longford, and he trained with us last year. He's Mo Driscoll's son. Aaron O'Driscoll. Centre-half. He seems to be doing very well with them. Yeah. He's somebody, you'd be looking and saying, could we have held on to him at Bowes? You know, he trained with us. Longer obviously didn't fancy him, and he's gone to them, and he's starting every week. He seems to be a very, very good player.
I think for like players like that, he was away. I think he was at City, Southampton.
Yeah, I think most recently, Mansfield.
He's on loan, is he?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I think, like, you see the benefit of playing games, like, exactly, lads like that. You know what I mean? Like, he's played every minute for Longford now, and he looks very strong. To be fair to him,
absolutely. Two wins in the spin, quite essential for Bowes now going into this. I think we said a few weeks ago we should be taking 12 points from these four games.
Yeah, everyone's going to compare this is you're going to take it quarter by quarter.
Yeah.
We're 3 points up on where we were already last time, considering we accumulated very few points. So we're 3 points up on the last time. We win on Saturday, we're 5 points up after two games. We play a miserable Dundalk team. You don't know what their implications are going to be from going to Belfast. So we have to look at getting maximum points here over the next four games.
Absolutely, absolutely. What are your predictions now going into the week? I know what you said last week. Death, taxes and Bowes 1-0. Wayne Marshall said it was Bowes 3-0. He was the closest to it. And Wayne hardly watches football, which is the worst part about that prediction.
I'm going to go 2-0 Bowes, actually. I've already done a U-turn. I'm only a week in.
You, Rory, what do you reckon?
He's going to take a draw.
In the interest of family, I'll say a score draw.
A score draw.
I know, I think Bowes will shade it.
Yeah, good pitch. I think Bowes 2-3-0.
Yeah, I'm going to say 2-0 as well. I'm going to say we're going to finish the job. We started against them in Daly Mount there a couple of weeks back when we were 2-0 up and we obviously gave away.
I think if we come out with that bit between the tee, I think we can put it to bed early. Hopefully Rory's banging fucking pots outside Paddy's room and setting off the alarm in the gap. Do us all a favour. Yeah,
absolutely. We've a couple of just shout-outs now to finish the podcast. One is to John Leonard Sr., who runs a Bowes WhatsApp group that's full of gambling tips. If anyone wants in, give John Leonard Sr. a shout or just give us a DM and we'll give you the details for that one.
Another friend of mine, Ethan Bradley, who's been going to a couple of Bowes games, he's a new fan as such. He tragically lost his father unexpectedly during the week, and I knew him. He's one of my best mates. Yeah, Wayland knows him, and Rory knows him. We'll raise a glass. Joe Bradley.
Cheers.
And just a shout out to two Bowes businesses before we close up. It's New Age Barbers in Fisbury. Jay Blake runs that shop, and Collie's Cuts out in Colester. So any Bowls fans,
take a bookings
again.
Have
a look, because they're open today, and we always want to support Bowls business.
Absolutely.
And we'd like to thank Bodge and Grant Creel for supplying the beers again this week.
Thank you very much,
and
Bodge.
And Bowls Fashion, we're sitting here in the nip because we're still waiting on tracksuits.
So, well, typical beauty, John O'Reilly.
Typical Bohemian fashion.
Here
come
we
on
go.
The fucking Bowls.
Oh, Bowls.
Cause we all follow Bowls wherever they play. We don't care if it's home or away. We are the Bowies, and we're proud of our name. So we'll all bounce around and we'll sing it again.